This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Today, The Music Tells You, it's a special program. We present Young Ki Kim Renaud, poet and linguist, reading an opening poem in English and Korean. And here she is, Young Ki Kim.
Rose of Sharon by Young Ki Kim Renaud. Your lure was irresistible. I sneaked out of my safe haven from the virus to seize you, to free you. Three robust saplings of Rose of Sharon, entrenched in Hearn's patch, crowding and threatening the harmony of her garden. You found a new home in my backyard. How have I been longing to welcome you, to adorn my place, a name so dear, Rose of Sharon, Mugunghwa. Your upright stalks, lithe petals, and pale green foliage will bloom into early fall, singing the virtues of constance, grace, humility, and resilience upheld by our ancestors. Lest you should feel too homesick in this new terrain, I made sure your roots kept some of the earth, clinging to them, mixing it with the adopted land's soil and some tonic of Miracle-Gro. Now you stand tall and proud, taking all the space you need, and yet, lonely and naked, you are saddened by the distance from each other and from home. And each one of you asks, how are my parents doing? And my siblings? Hardy Korean hibiscus, may you soon thrive, be it in the disparate earth, with a little bit of home, and with the same sun, air, and rain as those who you left behind enjoy, boasting a welcome burst of color in my monotonous garden on long, hot summer days. Mugunghwa, 현숙잎 정원에 뿌리 내려 솎아줄 때가 되었다는 무궁화 묘목 세 그루. 물리칠 수 없는 유혹에 살짝 빠져나가 드디어 캐어왔네. 나무들은 이사와 우리 집 뒷마당에 자리 잡았네. 듣기만 해도 사랑스러웠던 그 이름 무궁화. 얼마나 우리 집 단장해 주기를 기다렸었던가. 똑바른 종대, 우아한 꽃잎, 연두색 이파리로 이른 가을이 되도록 여름 내내 꽃필 무궁화는 은근과 끈기, 순수하고 우아한 미를 사랑한 우리 조상의 모습이리. 낯선 곳에 이사와 행여 고향 생각 너무 날라 뿌리에 붙은 흙 한 줌 같이 가지고 와 우리 마당 흙과 섞고 미러클그로 영양제도 좀 넣어줬네. 어느새 넓은 땅 있는 대로 자리 잡고 머리 들고 우뚝 서 있네. 그러나 외로이 벌거벗은 나무들 서로와 고향에서 멀어진 신세가 서글프다. 부모님은 안녕하신지 형제자매들은 튼튼한 우리의 민족의 꽃, 이방에서 흙은 달라도 두고 온 고향 식구들 즐기는 같은 흙 한 줌, 같은 해, 공기, 비로 길이길이 번창하여 길고 더운 여름, 단조로운 우리 정원을 찬란한 색깔로 물들이리.
What a beautiful metaphor for your life. The rose being the Rose of Korea, right? South Korea?
Rose of Sharon,
that
yes.
is your, and so having planted it in this earth, what a beautiful metaphor. Young-ki Kim Reno is a professor emeritus of the George Washington University. She's a linguist and a scholar of the humanities, and much, much more. It's hard for me to believe that you had any kind of long, hot summer days with your schedule, because you run the world. Tell me what this poem means to you.
Well, it was written during the recent pandemic, COVID pandemic, when everything was closed and people went into total isolation. A friend called, and in the course of our conversation, I found out that her corner of Roses of Sharon, Korea's national flower, had many saplings, and they were crowding her yard. And she was eager to share them with others. I asked another friend with a big van, and he agreed. He was kind of getting bored anyway. So we were armed in surgical masks and long gloves and boots, went to Hyun's backyard and dug them up and then brought them to my garden. So
had they originated in Korea, though?
Yes, and I'm not sure exactly. I cannot guarantee, but they are distinctly national.
That, yes.
And as the poem says, it represents resilience and also very modest but long-lasting.
And beautiful.
Beautiful flowers.
That's a great one to start off with.
Yes.
And a metaphor for your life. I'm holding in my hand a book called Songs in a Second Language, which you have edited, compiled, and generated. Just quickly tell us, how many poets and writers are in this anthology?
There are 17 of us. This is a collection of prose and poetry. So sometimes the same author writes in all three. So it's
in English.
Right. And it's an unusual subgroup of Washington. It's a society called Korean Literary Society of Washington. And most people write in Korean only.
But you have transferred.
There is a subgroup. Mm-hmm. There is a subgroup where people write in both Korean and English. And some people actually start writing in English.
And you're the chair of this.
I was. Right now, it's Kwang Mi Lee.
I thought you were president now.
I'm actually the chair of the board of trustees. I mean, board of directors.
Let's face it. You are the spine of KLSW. You won the New Writers Award in 2012. And you've been editor-in-chief of their volumes in 2016. And the English writing subgroup is the one that is in this anthology.
Right.
But let us hear a poem of your own now. Young-ki Kim Reno has published 13 books, including Creative Women of Korea and So Flows History. This is an English translation of Han Moo-suk's novel in Korean. And she is an eminent scholar and writer. So we're going to have another poem.
So this one is called The Korean Indians. My brother Hogi, fresh from Korea, loved wearing his hanbok to go play go, or rather paduk in Korean, with his friend Josun. Neither Hogi nor his esteemed high school senior wore the hanbok in Korea, but it felt natural for them to go around the Berkeley campus to play the ancient game in their native apparel. My friend Bertrand's brother Claude, visiting from France and touring the U.S. for a photography book, wanted to capture as many shots as possible of the brother and sister in Korean attire on the hilltop of Tilden Park for an entry entitled California, the Gate to Asia. An enthusiastic tourist approached us. "You look wonderful. May I take your photo too?" Not just Frenchmen, but also Americans love our national dress. "Of course, go ahead." The man with beads of sweat running down his forehead shook Hoagie's hand and declared, "I'm so excited. You are the first Indians I have ever met."
You know, I would laugh if I wasn't crying over that. And it is just so... Here's what we take with insults. We turn it into art. We take an insult and turn it into art. And then the sting becomes something beautiful. So what do you have to say about this poem? I'm so glad you wrote it because it shows ignorance and tolerance on two different sides.
Well, I try to see the situation. It's a very innocent person. But there are certain preoccupations. So when people are different, they all look alike.
but an Indian, I mean, it's just, that's beyond the pale, I think.
Right, because at that time, Indians didn't, maybe even today, they have certain baggages carried because of the historical relationship.
Exactly.
But we just thought it was funny.
Well, thank you, because we do too, and it hurts and still you laugh. But as a linguist, what is the most difficult thing you have to overcome when you're translating? What do you have to overcome? Because you already know the academic origin of the Korean alphabet. You already know the linguistic roots. Then you have to forget all that and just go word by word to change it to English and then burnish it to make it lyrical. What is that chore?
Well, as everybody knows, the most important essence of any human being is its language. And language and culture are so intricately related, and they represent your soul, your history, your emotion, and your human relationship with other people. And then when you are put into another context, in another language, they have their own system, right? So all these relationships are very important in even talking, just because in Korean, for example, you cannot even say good morning to anybody without first knowing what your relationship is to that person. So you have to put yourself in a larger context in order even to enunciate good morning. So when you are put into another language context where they have a whole different system of expressing their ideas and their loves and their hate and their joys and sorrows.
So when you taught at George Washington, and as you practiced your profession as a linguist, you were really a historian, culture, sociologist. It's everything, isn't it? Language.
Of course.
For it's the first record we have of humankind, where we knew what you felt. We have other land deeds and other treatises, but poetry is the first document where we actually knew what people felt, and you're carrying on that tradition, so we'd love another poem.
Okay, so next one, it's called Small Eyes. "You are beautiful. Your eyes are so cute. But I always wondered how you could see everything with such small eyes. Ah, madam, small eyes see things more clearly, for they help you focus. Just think about it. You squeeze your eyes to make them small to see better. Don't you wish you were born with small eyes?
You know, we both have a common friend, Dashiell Kim Gibson, and that was said to her in an elevator. Do you know that it wounded her? That wounded her, but look what you did with it. You made it into a poem which resonates with goodwill. That is your mission. That is your mission. Let's go back to the mashed potatoes poem, which is, I have it, number 3.
Oh, mashed potatoes. Okay. So I will read.
This is one of my favorites. That's why I'm pushing you to this one.
Yeah. A Korean restaurant, it's called Bulgogi with Mashed Potatoes. A Korean restaurant opened in Midtown Champaign, Illinois. It was the talk of the town. The most popular fare, bulgogi, fire beef, served with mashed potatoes, was $4, with sweet and tangy coleslaw as a side dish for 40 cents more. The aroma of the sizzling meat, marinated with garlic, green onion, soy sauce, sesame seed oil, crushed salted sesame seeds, and a smidgen of sugar cooked over wood charcoal filled the air of the quiet street. The menu had a photo of the mouth-watering Korean barbecue with mashed potatoes instead of rice and coleslaw as a kimchi substitute. Mr. Kim, the bespectacled cashier and owner of the restaurant, was reading a book. A college professor back home, he left his motherland in search of liberty and with high hopes for his child's future. Mr. Kim's mother, Halmoni, grandmother, a truly fine cook, learned to make mashed potatoes the way the Americans loved. Mrs. Kim was the sous chef, doubling as the waitress. She was laughing and joking with a few customers, no matter if they didn't understand what she said. The senior Kim, Harabaji, grandfather, the patriarch of the family back in Korea, now helped with dishwashing. The cashier's little son, Minsu, sitting next to him at a makeshift desk, wrote in his note in Hangul, "Daehanminguk manse, long live Korea." Not sure what his homework was, Korean students and residents gathered there for friendship and for a little taste of home, no matter if rice and kimchi were missing. They were proud to see foreigners eat their food. The curious people of Champaign-Urbana sampled something new, traveling to the uncharted realm. Ah, what a tasty turn it made. Bulgogi with mashed potatoes.
You know, I really love that poem because it's about unity and assimilation made permanent, but also because first-generation people, the first thing they did was open restaurants and barbershops.
Yes.
My own grandparents had the first Italian restaurant in Trenton, New Jersey, and that is so, at the turn of the century, that is so typical of what people do because the one thing they come to this country with is a knowledge of the kitchen. That is universal. And their management skills were a little wiggly, I must admit, but it was that's a pleasure. So what do you have to say about that poem?
Yeah, this was actually directly influenced by your
tomato pie.
Tomato pie.
I'm honored. Tomato pie is 25 cents.
So it really touched my heart. In a very similar way, this bulgogi with mashed potatoes did.
What a wonderful comment. You know, what this is a story. People love stories. They love characters, plots. They like situations, and it has this poem has everything in it.
How I feel about poetry, because I don't want to be too nebulous. I want to actually I want to talk. I want to tell my story. That's why I write.
And because it really resonates with everyone's story. Look how one of us touches off the other.
Yeah.
It is the universal language for sure. And we have so many more to hear next. I'm so pleased. So let's continue, because this is about your fashionista days.
Yes. So I will read this poem, which is called The Real Pearls. At my brother-in-law's wedding, I, the Korean woman, must dress to impress with a masterpiece by Eunhye Kim, a purple satin silk dress embroidered with bold white magnolias, bright yellow centers dancing elegantly with brown branches and green leaves, a matching long coat sweeping the floor, moving along the sure, cheerful gait. Chunks of iridescent southern hemisphere sea pearls. A union of beautiful people from two French bourgeois families. Where else could I put to better use mother's gift of a lifetime? Blessing my own marriage. The elder brother-in-law offers his usual overpraising. Oh, you look glorious today. Someone whispers, she's a daughter of a Maharaja. Most are preoccupied with themselves, embracing and talking to the newlyweds. More food, more drinks, more dancing, and more small talks. To share happiness and hope, and to feel, so fitting. A long stare from nowhere, then in front of me a tall, handsome, self-assured young man. Is he the best man, the bride's brother? No doubt a good dancer, a gentleman. But the stranger asks me, are those pearls real? Of course. Not good at hiding. His shock and disgust, the superior man hurriedly fades into oblivion.
Now,
before I could say another word.
That is a kind of mysterious. First of all, people have to know you've married a Frenchman.
Yes.
So you're a Korean bride in a French setting.
Yes.
And the what is the object? Is it his rudeness and your directness? What I get from this is that you're always direct in life and in art. And that was off-putting to him. But what do you think was the point of his asking that? To see if you were worthy of the bride of Bertrand?
Yeah, it's actually a very good point, because Asians, when they are not quite fitting the people's prejudice or preoccupation, they are treated in two different ways. One is just like my elder brother who said, "You are like Maharaja or glorious, or you are like a fairy," and it's a over.
Compensation.
Is exaggerated hyperbolic praise, or there is a certain kind of so-called Orientalism there, or they think you must be so corrupt, or so you must have exploited your compatriots.
You know, would you just give us one sentence about your mother, just showing your lineage?
Yes, actually, the Ansel Flo's history, that is actually a translation of my mother's book, which is quite famous. And I think it went under 18 reprinting or something like that.
Well, one of the first women novelists.
Yes, she's
in Korea.
She's a major writer, novelist, and two of them are actually translations of two translations of her novels are published by two major university presses. One is by University of Hawaii, and the other one is University of California, Berkeley.
So. And a street is named after her.
Yes, right.
In South Korea.
Yes, actually, our home where I grew up became a museum, literary museum, and that street is honored in her name. It has an honorary title.
So, I guess your pearls were real.
They were real.
I guess they were.
They were real, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that story.
Yes.
So, this is Youngki Kim Renaud, who has a rich life and is passing that on to us. And what will we hear next?
So, next one is called My Fairy Godmother. Just for one evening, let me be a princess in a faraway land. Just for one evening, lend me an elegant aura, a tiara of diamonds and pearls, to blend my salted hair with sparkles. Let a gleaming cat mask hide my worry lines. Just for one evening, let me wear snow-white gloves, one hand folding a glossy purse with dainty peonies, the other gently touching the trustful arm of my gallant prince, my heart fluttering. Just for one evening, let my Cinderella shoes under my flowery flowing dress dance to dreamy music as we glide across the parquet floor, catching reflections in golden mirrored walls. Just for one evening, let me forget missed and looming deadlines, committee meetings, making and remaking reservations. Just for one evening, let me forget the journal, unhappy faces, foes, floors to mop, windows to wipe. Let me forget more things to fix, lunches for Ariana, film editing classes, gifts to buy, the banana split. Just for this evening, this one evening, let all the clocks stop well before midnight.
What I love, you've got your Prince Charming with Bertrand. What I love is the fantasy that the scholar and the humanist can get into fantasy, and that is so magical. And it's such a woman's poem. You know, we believe in magic, don't we? That's terrific. What do you have to say about that?
Well, it's all true, but also I wanted to say that I do sometimes feel like a Cinderella, and I had come a long way from being a true Indian to being elected to the Cosmos Club, where this dance happened, a place of civility and dignity.
The Mardi Gras ball.
Yes.
Do you have a picture of that?
Yes.
So
actually,
you have to send it to me.
Yes, I
want
can,
to see what the fairy princess looked like. And moving on, we have, you know, if they get this anthology, Songs in a Second Language, an anthology of Korean American literature, you can stay with these poems and read them in bed as you listen to them on the podcast. So we're lucky. You know, just the idea of making things permanent is very important to me.
Mm.
Very important.
Thank
and
you.
We'll have another poem from Youngki Kim.
So here's a poem called The Prayer to Saint Valentine. May your holy love make a miracle. May your almighty passion chase away the evil spirit possessing my little brother. May your flaccidity fill the space with his grandchildren's laughter to stretch his time. But if it has to be now, just now, may your compassion help us understand the eternal truth of life. Mm. May your gentle breeze soothe where it hurts. May your soft hand wipe our tears away.
Do you know, although this was written to a person who passed, when I read this poem, just because I want comfort. And it's so interesting that this is a poem we could read for today's turmoil and be comforted. It's like a meditation, which proves like it was written for a very personal experience. But that proves the point that in poetry, the tiniest detail becomes the most universal. I always tell my students, tell your secret, because the deepest secret becomes the one everyone wants. That is such a lesson to us that I will actually teach that poem. So this was not a brother, though, right?
Yes, my brother, youngest brother, actually, passed. He passed away of pancreatic cancer. Yeah,
I see.
He went very fast.
They say within 6 weeks.
So it was very...
I feel it. It has a deep resonance, but it also, to me, it is a prayer where we need to just take solace and to be silent with it. And it is just really a balm. So what are we going to hear now?
So this will be our final reading, and maybe I'll read also in Korean in this
case.
So I'll read in English first. So it's called the Thanksgiving Day 2020. So clear yet so cryptic, the blue sky. So brave yet so tender, the teary caregiver. So hoarse, yet so euphoric, the cry for justice. So turbulent, yet so hopeful, the wind of change. So sad, yet so beautiful, a friend's story. So faint, yet so abiding, mother's fragrance. So gentle, yet so powerful, Uncle Huang's kayagum sound. So pungent, yet so delicious, kimchi jjigae. So remote, yet so close, Ariana's soft face on screen. So familiar, yet so renewing, Bertrand's presence. In Korean, it goes like this. 2020 추수 감사절. 김영기. 투명하면서도 신비로운 푸른 하늘, 용감하면서도 부드러운 눈물에 의료진, 거칠으면서도 기쁨에 넘친 정의의 부르짖음, 휘몰아치면서도 희망에 찬 변화의 바람, 슬프면서도 아름다운 친구의 이야기, 은근하면서도 없어지지 않는 어머니 향기, 잔잔하면서도 힘찬 황병기 아저씨 가야금 소리, 코를 찌르면서도 맛있는 김치찌개, 멀면서도 가까운 화상 속 수아의 부드러운 얼굴, 익숙하면서도 활기를 돋아주는 베르트랑의 존재.
You read it so beautifully. The voice of Youngki Kim Renaud, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation, the Sinipet Fund, friends of the program, Natalie Canavor and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.
The music is by composer and performer Byung-gi Hwang, or Hwang Byung-gi. He happens to be my uncle by marriage, and this music is copyrighted and in his name.